Good morning. Welcome. I'm very excited to be here. Very happy to see so many people showed up for this talk. It's a very geeky talk. There will be hex numbers. There will be crash dumps. And yes, good to see some excitement already. And I hope you will learn something from this. Just for starters, how many of you have already used WinDBG? Oh, most of you. So a lot of you anyway. So perhaps I'm going to repeat something that you already know, but in order to get everybody up to speed, I'm going to do a small presentation of the tools and how we can use this for managed debugging. So a little bit about me. As we mentioned, I'm a Microsoft MVP, which means that I make a lot of noise about some Microsoft technology that somebody in Redmond actually noticed me and said that he's doing good. And that means that I get a little statue and a little diploma that I can put in my cube. And it means that I get to be a little closer to the Microsoft groups that develop the products that I'm interested in. I work as a software developer, just like most of you, I reckon, at a company called SimCorp. We do financial software. I do not have anything to do with the financial software. I do all the weird stuff, the problems, the proof of concept stuff, and like that. I'm also very active in the blogging community. I have a blog in Danish. So unfortunately, some of you may not be able to read it. And I'm also fairly active on Stack Overflow. The blog is codehole.dk, and you can reach me at my email address, or you can follow me at Twitter if you're interested. And please, if you like this talk or have any questions or comments, feel free to drop by, either send me a mail or post a comment on my blog. Most appreciated, because when you talk to people like this, it's hard to get feedback just from the crowd looking at you. So please feel free to post comments. And another thing I'm going to ask you is, please ask questions, because it's a fairly esoteric topic, and there will be things that are not perhaps clear to everyone. So if there's something you don't understand, please shout, and I'll try to cover it during the talk. Okay, so the agenda for today is we're going to look at the tools, and we're going to look at some specific problems like memory leaks and crashes and threading issues like deadlocks, and how we can use these tools to actually troubleshoot these. The tools that I'm going to show you are not meant as a replacement for Visual Studio. Visual Studio is this really great tool, but it doesn't handle all kinds of problems as well as the tools that I'm going to cover. So think of it as another tool for your toolbox, not a replacement for Visual Studio. So the tool that I'm referring to is WindBag or WinDBG or WinDebug. People call it by different names, but it's this fella here. And believe it or not, this is actually a GUI version. It may look like something out of the 80s, but that's what it looks like. It's a command line-based application in a GUI, essentially. So you enter commands down here, and you get the output up here. You can open additional windows for registers and so forth. I usually don't do that when debugging managed code. There are a couple things that are interesting. The version number is always up here. So is the current architecture, and you need to have the specific architecture for whatever you're debugging. Down here, we have the process ID. You can debug multiple processes at a time, and the current thread ID. And you have some other stuff over here as well. WinDebug is it's a free download from Microsoft. It's a user mode and kernel mode debugger. It doesn't understand any managed code whatsoever, so why is it even interesting to talk about here? Well, we can use another thing that ships with the .NET framework. It's a DLL called SOS that if we load that into WinDBG, we can debug managed applications. So WinDebug can handle everything, so to speak. It can look at the process itself. It can look at the CLR, and actually we can get to dig into what the CLR is doing with our application, something that's really hard to do from Visual Studio. And with SUS, we can map all the managed structures that we know from C# or VB code or whatever, and have a look at them at runtime. So if you go to Wikipedia, you may find this page. It's allegedly the first actual real bug found in a computer. It was found in relays. I think it says 70 there. And I think it was about 1947 or something like that. So what kind of tool do you need to remove an actual moth from a computer? Probably a pair of tweezers or something like that. In that respect, if we look at Visual Studio, I wouldn't really call it a pair of tweezers. It's more like a sledgehammer. It gets the job done, but it's heavy, and it takes a lot of effort. And sometimes we just don't have that luxury of being able to employ a sledgehammer. Typically, if we have a production environment, the customer will not be very happy if we ask to install Visual Studio, because that requires like half an hour and a dozen reboots and what have you, and the thing may not work after that. So if you're in a production environment, it would be very nice to have a tool that we can use that's a little less intrusive than Visual Studio. As I said in the beginning, Visual Studio is still a great tool. And for probably the majority of the bugs that you're going to look at, I would still recommend using Visual Studio because it's really, really great. If you can reproduce it in your test setup, do so because it's easier. It's going to give you more information. But if you cannot, WinDBG and SOS is a really excellent combination. So, enough talk. I'm going to show you a little bit of code in C#. It doesn't do anything interesting. This is not a real problem I'm trying to display here. I'm just going to show you some code and show you how this looks in the debugger. And then after that, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's required to use this, and then we're going to go into the real problems and looking at some actual problems. So I'm going to start off by showing you some very simple C# code. So here we have a simple main method. It doesn't do anything. For starters, it says %enter to begin, and then we can attach the debugger here. And then we allocate an instance of a type that I defined called sumType. And as you can see here, sumType will be referenced by a static reference. And then I call debugger.break, which is something you shouldn't do in an application, but which is something that makes it a little easier for me to demo here. In the real examples, there won't be any debugger.break, obviously. So let's just start this and attach the debugger, and I'll show you a couple of things how you get started with WinDBG and SOS. Sorry. And the first thing you'll notice is that I have two installations for WinDBG because you need the correct architecture to debug. And sorry, this is supposed to be a 32-bit app. I'm going to attach to the process just as you would in Visual Studio. And the first thing that greets me is a list of modules that's loaded into this process. And usually, if you know what version of the framework you're running on, then you don't need to think about it. But since it's a demo, I'm going to point out to you that this is the version of the runtime that we're running on. So it's a 4.0 .NET framework application. The runtime is called CLR. It used to be called MS CoreWorks. Now it's called CLR. And we need that in order to load the correct version of SOS. So the next thing we are going to do is load SOS, which is the extension that I'm going to use here. And I tell it to load SOS from the same location as the runtime. So that way I'm sure that I can get the correct version of the runtime. Sorry, the correct version of SOS for the runtime. And I can do a chain to see that I actually have the correct version. So this tells me that SOS is now loaded. And now WinDBG will be able to understand managed code. So another thing that I'm going to do here before we start is I'm going to turn this into even fancier GUI application. I'm going to enable what's called DML, Debugger Markup Language, which is a sort of HTML like syntax for embedding links into the output of the debugger. It's supported for the SOS 4.0, but not previous versions of SOS. And as you can see, now if I do the chain, I get a fancy link that I can click, and this will show me what commands are available in SOS. If I want help using WinDBG, obviously I can press the F1 and get the help for WinDBG itself. If I want help for SOS, I can do the bang help command, and that will show me all the available commands in SOS. And if I want help for a specific command, I can do bang help on that, and say I want to know something more about the gc root command. I can do help gc root, and I get some textual description of what this command does and what parameters it takes. There's not a lot of documentation available for SOS, but you can do the help and you'll get answers to most of your questions. And there are a few people like myself that do a lot of blogging about SOS and WinDBG, and you can probably find answers to the rest of your questions there. Okay, so let's go back to the code for just a second. As we said, nothing really happened so far. We put out the print ender to continue. So now I'm going to hit go in the debugger and continue down to this debugger.break, which means that we'll have an instance of some type on the heap. So let's do that. That means that I have to press enter, obviously. There you have it. And I'm back in the debugger now. And as you can see, there's an interrupt 3 means a debugger break. So, and at this point, we should have an instance of some type on the heap. So let's dump the heap and look for, for instances of some type. WinDBG tells us that there is one, and it's at this address. We can click the fancy link here, and we can see that it is, in fact, some type. This is the data in it. It has a one, and there's a reference here because strings are reference types, so we need to move one step further in order to look at the string. We can do that, and the text is here. And if we go back to the code, it's pretty much what we expected to see from this. Okay. So far, nothing much has happened. So let's continue. Let's look at the code. If I hit continue now, I will call some method, and some method will write to the trace, and will allocate yet another instance of some type. This time, it's a local reference to the instance, and then we will do a debugger break again. You notice that the output from the trace... Yes, sir? All of these tests are in release. I'll get back to that, but obviously you'll have more information in a debug build, but hopefully you don't deploy debug builds. So it's good for learning purposes, but for real actual problem solving, debug builds are not that interesting. Unfortunately, they do have a lot of more details than the release builds. But this is a release build. Anyway, as you can see here, I highlighted this, the sum method, which is the output here from the trace. And as you can see, WinDBG acts as a trace listener for your application. That can be very useful. So at this point, we are in sum method. We just allocated a new instance of sum type. So let's see... let's see the stack at this point. So the stack at this point tells us that we're running this program. It's called sum method, and then called debugger.break. So let's go back and look at the instances of sum type on the heap, and now we find two of them. So how can we find the one that was just allocated? Well, in this case, it would be easy, but in a typical application, you would probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of instances of any given type. But since .NET uses the stack for everything, we can do a DSO, which stands for dump stack objects. And we see that there are two on the stack. And since this one is ordered in the way they're called, so this one would be the first and this one would be the second, let's have a look at this one. Sorry, that was the wrong one I clicked. This one. As you see, the backing field here says 1337, and the string says hello world, which is the one we saw here in the instance method. Now, let's assume that for some reason we believe that this object was not being collected as it should. Let's do a GC route on that specific object and find out what this is. This was a, sorry, I picked the wrong one. I picked the string. Let's do it on some type instance. There you have it. The GC route will tell us, from the point of view of the managed runtime, what is holding on to this object. And if something is holding on to this object, it will not be garbage collected. Due to this one? Or I did? Sorry. Is this what you want to see?
No, the other way.
Okay. It is zoomed.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
It does? That's a bummer. Is there something we can do about that?
Yeah, you can move the window.
No, because I'm running full screen here, but I can make it a little. Okay, we'll do it like that. Sorry about that. Anyway, as I was saying, the GC route tells us from the CLI point of view what is holding on to this object. And in this case, we see that we have a reference on the stack. The ESP is the stack pointer. So just as we expected, the one that we just allocated is actually being referenced from the stack of that method. Makes sense, right? So let's just carry on, and maybe I should go back here. So if I carry on, I will call sub method, which will write some stuff to the trace again, and we will call an instance method, and then we'll call a type method. And the type method would actually end up in another breakdown here. So again, you see the trace output here, and I called this. You can configure this to whatever color you like. I like it to stand out very clearly, so I can see when the application actually outputting stuff. Let's do another CLR stack and see what we have here, and pretty much what we expected to see: some method called some sub method and type method and so forth. Okay. There are still a lot of things that I haven't showed you, but that we'll get back to when we start to look at the real problems. But hopefully now you have seen the way we're working with WinDBG and SOS. It does take a lot of typing, and even with DML, where you can just click links, you will have to copy and paste hex numbers every now and then. But basically, you can dig into any kind of details that you want. You can inspect the objects live. You can inspect what's holding onto them. You can inspect the call stacks. And as we'll see later, you can look at threads and so forth. So for now, I'm just going to say quick and detach, which will leave my little application running as if nothing has happened, which is a really nice thing as well. So back to the slides. Any questions so far on what I've shown? I'm aware that this is not really debugging. It's just showing you. Yes, sir? I need the symbol loaded, yeah, and it says so here that I have to show you how to load the symbols. Good point. WinDBG, like any other debugger, needs symbols. Actually, for managed code, we can get by for a long time without using the symbols. But once we get into the native part, which is the CLR itself, we need the symbols in order to get some meaningful context here. The good thing about managed code is that as we have type objects in memory and we have metadata and so forth, we can actually dig out a lot of details without symbols. But still, you should set up symbols. The easiest way to do that is, if you're only going to do WinDBG every once in a while, use the .symfix command, which will set up your symbols to point to the public Microsoft symbol server and get the symbols that you need for the DLLs that you actually load. If you don't have internet access while you debug, sorry, you can go to the same site and actually download symbols for a specific build, but they're huge, and you need one for the specific version and architecture and so forth. So if you're going to do that, you're going to download a lot. The easiest option is to use a public symbol server. Any other questions? Nope. I'm going to continue then. Okay, the recap. As the gentleman just said, you're supposed to load symbols, and I didn't show you how to do that, but I'll get back to that in the next demo. And I enabled the debugger markup language, which was the small links that you saw in the debugger. I show you how you could get the help from SOS, and you can also get help from WinDBG, and that's very useful as well. I showed you a couple of commands, and these are only a small section of the commands that are available in SOS and that we use on a regular basis if we do this. So the tools, just to give you an overview here, is SOS, the SOS DLL is actually part of every version of .NET. It's in the .NET library, and you need to use the specific version for whatever version of .NET that you're using. The tools, WinDBG is part of debugging tools for Windows, which is a free download from Microsoft. It used to be a very simple download, just go there and get a zip and you're all set. Now it's part of either a very clunky web installer or an ISO image that you have to mount and then pull out stuff and all that. But once you've done that, once and for all, you can just store that in a place and carry it on a USB stick or whatever. It's all you need. It's not a big download. We have two other DLLs that are interesting. They're both extension DLLs, just like SOS. It's a SOSX, which is a free download as well from Steve's TechSpot. It adds some command to SOS. For instance, it has better support for managed breakpoints, and it has a really neat deadlock command as well. And then there is PSS Core 2, which is sort of a replacement for SOS in the sense that it has all of the commands that SOS offers, plus some additional commands. And the commands that overlap are even improved a little bit in PSS Core 2. But there are two problems with it currently. First is that it doesn't ship with the framework. So you cannot just expect it to be there. If you want it, you have to install it yourself. It's just a DLL, so it's not a big issue, but it can be a problem installing stuff on a customer machine. The next problem is that currently it doesn't support .NET 4, and it doesn't support DML either. And I like the DML, but that's not a big issue. The biggest issue is .NET 4. So when I started to do this, the world was really simple, or my world was really simple at least, because we had CLR 2.0. Everything, even 3.0 and 3.5, all ran on the same CLR and was easy. Everybody was doing 32-bit apps, or at least everybody I knew were doing 32-bit apps. These days, 64-bit is very much apparent all over the place now. And we have these additional, the PSS Core 2 and the SOSX and so forth. We have different runtimes. The 2, 3, and 3.5 has this runtime, and the .NET 4 has this runtime. Silverlight has yet another runtime. And all the runtimes need a specific version of SOS in order to work. And some of the additional tools work on, as you can see here from the table, work on the different versions. And the only thing that's really common to all of them is SOS. So that's what I'm going to focus on. But if you're interested in this, I do encourage you to take a look at both SOSX and PSS Core 2. I know there are other runtimes, such as the Mono. I'm not going to touch that. And there's the runtime in the SQL Server, which is, as I understand it, radically different from all of the other runtimes. I can't really go into the specific on the SQL Server thing because, well, we use Oracle. Shh. Anyway, in order to run SOS, we need to set up symbols. We can do it by setting the NT symbol path environment variable. That's what I do. It's easy, and then it's done. The downside of doing it that way is that this affects Visual Studio as well. So if you don't want Visual Studio to download symbols while you're debugging in Visual Studio, you don't want to use the symbol, environment variable. If you don't want to do that, you can just use the .symfix, and it will set up WinDebug to use the public Microsoft symbol servers. And if you have problems with symbols, and a lot of people do, if you go to Stack Overflow or any other forum that where people ask questions about this, a lot of them will relate to symbols. So if you want to debug your symbols, you can use the bank sim noisy, and it will tell you, I'm trying to load symbols for this file in this location, and it will give you a much better idea of what's going on and why it doesn't work. Then there is the process itself. We need to know which version of the runtime it actually uses. Currently, there are two. I guess there are three because 1x is also a version. But any of you still use 1x? No, there are some people. I don't know anything about 1x. I'm sorry. Please get to 2.0 or 4.0. Anyway, the runtime is important. We need to have the specific version for the runtime we're using. And we need to have the right bitness as well. And then, as I mentioned, the DML is supported in SUS4 only. So as we just talked about, there are different builds. There are the debug builds and the release builds. And one common misconception is that release builds do not have symbols. I don't know where people get that idea, but I see it a lot of times on Stack Overflow that people say, well, I have a release build, so I don't have any symbols. Yes, you do. Because symbols are stored in another file, and they don't really affect your application, so you want to have symbols for your release builds. Otherwise, your debugging experience will be really, really hard. The best in terms of information available while we debug is the 32 debug build. Hopefully, you're not deploying debug builds. So the next best thing for 32-bit is release. Release has some information, but for instance, once a jitter kicks in, it will optimize away a lot of the parameter parsing and so forth, so you can't really dig that out during a debugging session. I'll show you some of the tricks as to what we can do, but it gets harder with release builds. That's even worse on 64-bit, because the calling convention on 64-bit is pass everything in a register. And register is such a flaky thing from a debugging perspective, because they change all the time, and you can't really dump them like you can dump the stack and see what was going on like maybe 10 minutes ago. So debugging on 64-bit is more of a problem, I would say. But that's the world we're facing, and there's really no way around it. On 32-bit, you could basically define your own calling convention. On 64-bit, there's only one, and that says hide the information from the debugger. That's probably not how they put it in the spec, but that's the effect of it, okay? Okay. Just some basic concepts we're still going through here. WinDBG has three kind of commands. There are the regular commands. They are like Unix-style 1-2 letters. You have to know them or you're clueless. They're even hard to look up in the help file because, well, they're 1-2 letters. But these are all the commands for the native. These are like dumping native stacks, watching the threads, and so forth. Then we have the meta commands. The meta commands all starts with a dot. And they enhance the debugger in some way, for instance, by loading an extension DLL. And then we have the extension commands, which are all the commands in SUS and so forth. They all start with a bang. And I showed you a little in the example that we can get help. The help file for WinDBG itself is actually really, really useful. It has lots of information, so that should be your first place to look for answers. The help for both SOF and PSS Core is also very useful. WinDebug does have one quirk, though. When I showed you the chain, the list of extension DLLs that were loaded in, then the last of them becomes the default DLL. So if you just say bang help and multiple extensions expose the bang help command, you'll get the one from the last loaded. That's not always what you want. SOSX is helpful in that regard because it also defines a bang SOSX help. But if you want to change the default DLL, you can use the .set DLL command and specify that, for instance, you want SOS to be the default. WinDBG supports several different ways of debugging. I'm not going to cover them all today. In fact, I'm only going to cover attached to process and open crash dump. But we can do open executable as well. The good thing about open executable is that we run a process through the debugger. And since this is a process, we get in actually before the CLR is loaded. That means that we can load SOS at that point. But if you're like me, in SimCorp, we host our own CLR, which means that there's some other process instead of the shim process that actually loads the CLR. And if we have any problems related to that, we can use WinDBG because we can get in before the CLR itself is loaded. Now, the other two very useful ways to debug is attached to process, which is similar to what you do with Visual Studio. There's a non-invasive mode, which is nice. because it allows you to attach to the process even if another debugger is actually attached to the process. It doesn't let you control the debuggy, but it lets you inspect data. So you can look at the heap, you can look at the stacks and so forth, but obviously you cannot control the process. When you attach to a process, it's non-destructive in the way that when you detach, the process is left running just as if nothing has happened. Obviously, there has been a break in the execution, but apart from that, it will run just as if nothing has happened. And crash dumps are really useful. If we're at a customer site and we have some problems, we can take either a crash dump or what is called a hang dump, which is basically a snapshot of the process memory at the time. We can take that back to the office and load it up into WinDBG and have a look at everything that was going on at the time. We can look at the threads, we can look at the stacks, we can look at the heap, and so forth. Everything is in there. We can't run the program, but we can look at the snapshot, and that's very useful. So how do we create these dump files? Well, in Vista and Forward, actually, if you just go to the task manager, you can click on any process and say create dump file. If you use the real task manager, i.e. project, you can do the same. With debugging tools for Windows, there's a tool called AppPlus, which is it used to be a small VB script. Now it's an exe file, but it's a little tool that allows us configure various kinds of dumps that we can create, hang dumps or crash dumps or whatever other things that we need. And then if you're really a fan of Micro Sinovich, you can get the prop dump, which offers some nice features. For instance, you can instruct it to do dumps based on, for example, process load. So if you're troubleshooting some kind of performance issue using this technique, prop dump is really useful. Now, as I said, AdPlus used to be a VBS, now it's an exe. So it's a rewrite of this. It was a VBS script from hell. It was really, really long. So what Microsoft figured was that we're going to implement this as a managed application in order to make it easier for us to maintain and enhance. So basically in probably the previous versions or so of WinDBG, they replaced it with an exe file. And for most part, it acts just like the VBS. I've encountered a few problems with it, but fortunately, the VBS is still available in the package. It's just called the adplus.old.vbs now. So if you need it, it's still around. Basically, the two main purposes of this is we can use it to make crash dumps, so we can monitor any process. In this case, I'm using the process name and telling it to put the crash file in the output directory. So if this process crashes at some point, we'll get a dump of the process at that time. We can also do a hang dump, which obviously is useful if the process is hanging for some reason, if, for instance, we have a deadlock. But it's also useful just to take a snapshot of the process if there's any other problem that we're going to troubleshoot. It basically goes in at this specific time and takes a snapshot of the process. And we can do that as many times as we like. Yes? Yes, it is. The script actually remote controls, if you will, the CDB debugger, which is the console version of WinDebug. So it attaches to the process and does a memory dump from within the debugger. So the application is halted while you do it. I guess for a crash dump, it doesn't really make any difference. And for a hang dump, it could or it could not make a difference. If you're troubleshooting a real hang situation, then obviously you have one, two, or more threads that are stalled, and they won't change. But if you do it on any arbitrary running process, you will get this state at that moment, which will change immediately after you detach. Now we have the 64-bit Windows, and just out of curiosity, how many of you are running 64-bit? That's probably the better part of you. Yeah, so am I. And it's really nice. And what's nice about it is that our 32-bit applications are actually a lot better off in 64-bit world than they were in 32-bit world, because now they get the whole 4 gigabyte address space available to them. However, the way that is done is by some, in lack of a better word, I shall call this magic. It's these three DLLs that actually fool the process into believing that it's running on a 32-bit OS. So it takes all the system calls and intercepts them and maps them to the corresponding 64-bit system calls. The effect of this is that when we run a 32-bit application on Windows, you know, the ones that get the little star next to them in Task Manager, we are actually running a 64-bit process. So if we take a dump on this process, we'll get a 64-bit process dump with all the WOW64 stuff in there. If we're one of the developers on this stuff, that's probably very useful. If you're one of the developers on this stuff, it's not so useful. And actually, it can be a little bit of a problem because SAS and PSS Core 2 doesn't play well with these WOW dumps. So what you want to do is, if it's a 64-bit process, obviously you're going to have the 64-bit dump. But if it's a 32-bit process, the trick here is to use a 32-bit dump application. And I don't know if you know this, but Windows 64 has 32-bit versions of almost everything. There's even a 32-bit version of the Task Manager. So if you launch the 32-bit version of the Task Manager and you do a create dump file, you'll get a 32-bit dump file. And it will look just like it would on any other 32-bit machine. So that's a way to go about it. Likewise, if you're using one of the other tools, make sure that you use the 32-bit version of it to get the 32-bit dump. So if you happen to have one of these WOW64 dumps, and that's typically because you ask a customer to create a dump file for you, and they just went into Task Manager and they did the create dump file, and there you have it. As I said, don't do that. If you can avoid it, don't do that. But if you do have one of these, there's a WOW64X extension that you can load into the, and this is a surprise perhaps, because you have to use the X64 version of WinDebug. Then you load in your 64-bit dump in the 32-bit version of WinDBG. Load this extension, switch to 32-bit mode, and then it's sort of like a 32-bit dump. There are still some issues, but it's a lot better than not being able to look at it at all. But this is how you go about it. That brings us to the next demo. And that means that I'm going to show you a little application that I wrote. I want the release mode for any CPU to crash. Here's the application. The users are really happy with this application. It says everything just works, you know. But when they touch just this one button, something goes wrong. And the button, of course, being the don't touch button. Then it just crashes, they say. And they have no idea what's going on. But everything else works fine. You can move it. You can't really resize it, but you can move it, okay? It's a really nice application. Otherwise, I made it. Okay, so in order to debug this, we're told that it will crash. I'll take the customer's word for it that it actually crashes. So let's set up add plus and make a crash dump for that. Since this is any CPU and I'm running 64-bit, I need the 64-bit version of add plus. I'm going to tell it that I want a crash dump, if I can spell it, and I'm just going to use the process name here, and then I'm going to tell it, put the dump in dumps. And I get this green welcoming screen that tells me that AdPlus is now monitoring my process. So if I go over here and play around with it, this will eventually crash, and I can just do the quit here. Small window popped up here that's actually doing the dumping. That's of less interest. Let's go into the dumps directory. And you see there's an entire directory named with the timestamp, and it's called crash mode and so forth. Let's go into that. And you see that there's a log file, and there are a couple of text files. I won't go into that, but I'll mention them because they contain a lot of info about the system state at the time of the dump, so you can see what other processes were running and so forth, and in some cases that may be very, very helpful in debugging a given problem. The important part here is full DOM first chance, la 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 long name dot DMP. And we can open that from WinDBG. I'm just gonna can't use that. So in the menu here, we have an open crash dump, Control D, which is what I usually use. And then we go to temp. Okay. You see, the information here is varsal. It tells us that it's a user mini dump file with full memory. Only application data is available. That sounds limiting, but remember that this is a tool that the guys who do Windows also use. So only application means that no, the kernel is not in here, no, your device driver is not in here. It's just the user mode space. But it's a full dump, so all the application data will be available in this.
Could you resize the window?
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. It looks perfect on my screen. Because I do want to maximize it, but I also is that okay? Okay. So, it also tells us a little bit about, as you can see here, the version of Windows that this is running on. It's a 64-bit version. It has 8 processors and version 7 Windows, la 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 la. So, it has a lot of information already there in the header. So this is a crash, and as we know, when something crashes, it's usually an unhandled exception, and exceptions are thrown per thread. So let's take a look at the threads in this application. Oh, I'll promise you to show you the simfix, and this is Unix style thing. So whenever I do something that succeeds, I'm just greeted with nothing. I can do the simpath, and it will tell me that I'm currently using the Microsoft public server. I'm not connected to any network here, so I hope that I already have caches of all the symbols that I need. So, anyway, let's load SAS, and let's do a threats command. Let's just enable the fancy DML stuff. And then you have the threats of this application. I'm going to do this so it's not down there. Thank you, Windows. Can you see the thing at the bottom? Good. Okay. This application has a number of managed threads. And as you can see, some of them are actually dead. These X's are just like the cartoon characters when they are dead. So it's like, these threads are no more. If we are lucky, we may be able to find the data associated with this, but for all practical purposes, these are no longer available. As you can see here, we have one thread that is alive, and actually, if we go to the rightmost column, it says exception, and that's a bit of a misnomer because it's exception and notes. As you can see here, the finalizer thread and thread pool worker threads are actually pointed out here in this column. But we also see that we have a system.application exception right here. So let's take a look at that. There's a convenient command called print exception, which can be shortened into just PE. And the print exception tells us that, well, here's a message. Get average failed. And there's even an inner exception here, and we have the entire stack down here. So since this has an inner exception, this is something that was caught elsewhere and just propagated. Let's look at the inner exception and try to find the real cause of the problem. Because I'm using DML, I can just click this. It's so fancy. And the inner exception is system index out of range exception. And that's just the standard message for that. Look at the call stack here. We have get average. That's what we expected. And then we have, over here, we have end invoke. Any guess as to what end invoke means in this connection? End invoke tells us that we ran some code through the thread pool with a begin invoke, that will run code on a thread pool thread. And if there's an exception on that, this code will collect the exception, and once we call end invoke, it will be rethrown at the calling context of end invoke. So this is just another, there's an exception that's coming off another thread than the thread we're looking at the moment. So how do we find that? If you recall, all the threads except the current thread here was actually dead. So how do we find out what code through this exception when we don't have the thread information? It could be a little hard. Let's dig into the code of get average. So I'm going to use a command called ip to md, which gives me the method description, which is like a method handle, a CLR method handle for a given instruction pointer. So you see the method description for getAverage is here. And then I can use the dump IL on a method description to get the IL for that method. And if you look at this, we do some initial setup here, and then we call something called subcalculation. And if we follow through, we'll see that there's a begin invoke call here, and if we do the nitty-gritty reading of this, believe me that the argument for begin invoke is actually this subcalculation. We can also see that it was called with the parameters 100, null, and null. In this case, constants. But so let's figure out something about this. Oh, we already have that there. Sorry. If we look at subcalculation, it's defined on crash form 1. So now we have the exact place in the source code where this problem actually originated. So now we can go back to the source code and look at this and figure out what was wrong. Does that make sense? So we managed to actually dig out some very critical detail about code that was running on a thread that's no longer available just by looking at the dump. And with that, oh, there was a screen that was supposed to tell you a little bit about the demo. We saw that. Yes? Yes. They do in the sense that even a managed application is just it's a regular win process.
But are they as useful?
No, not really. In my experience, Bang Analyze isn't really useful. But since the source commands are so much more, they give you so much more information because you have much more runtime information than you have in a native application, you can get the details yourself. And it's not that hard to actually script WinDBG to do something like Bang Analyze. So if you're working on a specific type of applications where you see common problems all the time, I definitely encourage you to script them. And then you can do something very similar to Bang Analyze. Just to recap, we used AdPlus to create the crash dump for the process. We looked at it in WinDBG. We inspected the threads because exceptions are tied to threads, and we looked at the exceptions. In this case, there were more than one, and we dug into the code and actually figured out where this originated. So for debugging exceptions like this, there are a couple of commands. The threads, as we saw, the print exception, which can be shortened to PE. You may also want to look at the stacks with the Bang CLR stack that I've showed you already, and I'll get back to that. The IP to MD is useful if you want to dig into the code of any given method. The dump IL will give you the IL code if you want. You can look at the JITted code as well. PSS Core 2 has a dump all exceptions. That's really useful if you have lots of exceptions in your application at a time. I'm not going to use that here, but I'll mention it because it can be very useful. The thread commands, as you saw, it will list all the managed threads, and actually, there may be a lot more threads than what you see here, because this only shows you code that will run managed. This only shows you threads that will run managed code. For the purpose of troubleshooting exceptions, obviously the exception column out there is really useful. If you call threads with the dash special parameter, it will tell you which special threads that the CLR started, and that will be, for instance, the finalizer and usually the debug helper as well. The print exception will tell you pretty much what you expect from a print exception command. It will tell you the exception type, the message, and the stack. If you have inner exceptions, just as we saw, there will be a reference to that as well. Yes? Our application?
Yeah.
Since I'm running locally, I have my own PDB files. Yes. And remember that Visual Studio will actually reduce PDB files for release builds as well. So, the IP to MD is useful if you want to dig into a method and you only have the information from a call stack that will tell you this is where this code is being called. You can get back to what method it was. There are other ways to do that, but this is really useful in this situation. And the dump IL will show the IL just like it would appear in say, ILDASM or Reflector. If you want to look at the JITID code, obviously you need another address because the JITID code is somewhere else. But you can use the bang U for unassemble the JITID code, and then you can see optimizations and so forth and what's really going on. It's not that often that I need to go into looking at the JITID code, but it's very convenient that you can. I was told that we have time for a break, so let's do that now, and we'll continue with the next two demos after the break.